Welcome to For the Record, an unfiltered view on current trends and timeless advice for surviving in the aesthetics industry. Whether you're an injector, practice owner, sales rep, or marketer, it's time to set the record straight. Each week, we cut through the chaos and showcase diverse perspectives and winning ideas from the best minds in the industry. I'm your host, Dr. Tiffany Hall, Chief Growth Officer at Aesthetic Record. Now, let's get started on this week's episode. Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of For the Record, Season 3. And I thought, what are we missing this season? We should have a ninja on our podcast. So we have in our studio virtually today the ninja injector, Dr. Lonnie Green, who is the founder and medical director at Revi Aesthetics. I said it right, in Richmond, Virginia. He comes from a long line of traditional medicine in urology, surgical urology, found his way to aesthetics, has an incredible practice with lots of other ninja injectors with him, and has a really great philosophy on why you do what you do, about confidence, about not doing just Botox and fillers, but really delivering confidence and a look and a desire, you know, the whole package. And so we're going to dive in today. He's got a whole Simon Sinek vibe that we love here at For the Record. So we're going to peel back the layers and really dig in. Dr. Green, welcome to our show. It's good to see you again from Aesthetic Next. It's only been a few months, but I'm glad to have you on today.
Well, it's great to see you, Tiffany, and thank you very much for this opportunity. I really appreciate a chance to connect with you again because it was such a wonderful time in Dallas. Thanks a lot.
Well, it's crazy because my good friend Gretchen Freeling said, you got to meet this guy. And I'm like, I know who that is, Gretchen. Of course I know who that is. And then she was like, you got to have Aesthetic Next. And within, I think, a week, I had called you. We agreed you were going to come. We had a PowerPoint deck and you were in Dallas. Like, I think it was a 7-day window from deciding to talk at Aesthetic Next, delivering a great presentation. I've watched it. You even had like visual aids. So you crush it on stage there, a little taste. I can't wait to hear more about that today and about just your whole perspective and your whole mindset. Because how long have you been in medicine? Give us a decade amount here.
All right. Well, first of all, let me just say you did an amazing job at Aesthetic Next. I've been to it twice now. And so thank you for advancing the field and getting so many great people together. So I really appreciate that. It was a quick turnaround, but I loved it. I happened into this by a very happy accident. I am the most grateful and lucky person in the world. I am a urologist by training, and I spent my whole career trying to help women with urologic problems. So that involved a lot of surgery for leaky bladders and bladder problems. And in fact, in 2006, I joined an OBGYN group, and my whole career was dedicated to women. I also really keep an open mind and believe in traditional medicine, complementary medicine. I did some brief study with a traditional Chinese medical doctor. As I matured, my patients matured, they were seeking help for menopause, and they knew that I believed in natural bioidentical hormone, and they asked me for it because my partners wouldn't do it. And I said, guys, they're OBGYN. So in the OBGYN community, there's a Women's Health Initiative study that showed that traditional medicine, menopause relief, can increase the risk of breast cancer and strokes. They wouldn't do it, but I presented all the data from great European data literature showing the safety of just using the patient's own hormones, but they wouldn't do it. So I started doing it in the practice, which didn't work. I opened a place one day a week just so I could have a place to help folks. Someone who did aesthetics came in because of the legality. I went to a weekend course to get the piece of paper to be the medical director should anything happen. Somebody there put a syringe in my hand and I've never looked back. I've had the good fortune of now doing this exclusively for a couple of years. I'm surrounded by great people. We've grown from 1200 square feet to 6,000 square feet. I've got two injectors, a couple of estheticians, and an amazing squad. So I pinch myself. When I say I'm living the dream, I'm so grateful for where I am.
Well, and let's not brush over the fact that you're Harvard trained. I mean, you've gone to like really great schools. You're very educated. I was looking at your research. You were doing toxin studies for idiopathic bladder, you know, concerns like way before we were putting it in our foreheads. I mean, you've been at this game in some way for a long time, but I find it interesting about you. This is a part about you that I love the most. And you don't even know this, I'm sure, but I'm a stalker on Instagram. You go to trainings all the time. Like you're a surgeon by trade. Obviously, you're very well versed in anatomy. Obviously, you weren't doing facial, but you know, you're obviously a big learner in general. You know what's going on. You've been a doctor for a long time. But you're at a training, I swear, all the time, learning constantly. I think you did a Swift thing I've seen you at recently. You've been aesthetic next. Like, you're always training. And I find that to be such a wonderful thing that you're still pushing and learning and growing. And so thinking about your own practice, like just in your own mindset, is that what your whole team, are you guys all just obsessed with learning and growing? Is that like the culture there?
Well, that's a great point. You know, what I tell my team is, you know, we have to be better today than we were yesterday, but I know that tomorrow people will get a better experience, and we have to be better tomorrow than we were today. It's just the way we are. And the minute we stop that is the minute we start dying. So we never stop training. We never stop learning. And we're just so grateful to have this opportunity to do it. I just love it. I literally just flew in last night from Los Angeles. I flew there Saturday, did an amazing ultrasound course, got to study with Leonie Schelke, who is just, I love the way she thinks about anatomy. I learned as much from this ultrasound course as I've ever done from a cadaver course. It blew my mind. And I've done lots of ultrasound, but I could go on forever. But yeah, the answer is yes, we train constantly, all the time.
Now, I want to dig into ultrasound really quickly, because as a person who is out training all the time, you're seeing things happening in real time. Ultrasound, let's go to the controversial answer here. Do you think it's going to be the wave of the future? I keep hearing it's like going to be the standard practice. I keep hearing it's not going to be. It's to scare us. No, it's to help make us better. Now that you're fresh off the boat of hearing one, what's your perspective on ultrasound? I'm just curious.
Absolutely, 100% must. If you want to understand, if you want to be the best you can be and understand facial anatomy, you can go to all the cadaver labs you want. You know, look, I went through medical school, did cadavers, I studied anatomy. But the minute you go into the operating room, all of a sudden, there's a living person there, and it's dynamic and it's moving. And ultrasound allows you to look at things in real time and ask people to express themselves. And if you just forget about the mindset of, oh, how would I use it? It's cumbersome. I can't inject under ultrasound. You know, what this, just that's so... that's in the box thinking. We need to understand every aspect of facial anatomy to be safe and effective. So it's just a no-brainer to me, Tiffany. If you're going to study, and it will become standard to at least understand this, it's a tool that's amazing. And now it's in the palm of my hand. It's a color Doppler in the palm of my hand. It's amazing. Sorry, I think it's the way it's going to go, 100%.
Oh, I love it. It's like become, it's almost like when cadaver labs got sexy 4 or 5 years ago, and now ultrasound's sexy. But you mentioned, you know, kind of going against the grain with hormone therapy and then coming out to do aesthetics. So you're kind of a guy that says, forget the status quo. I'm going to do what I want to do because it's the right thing to do. Coming from traditional, like very traditional medicine, I feel like urology is like one of those things that's, you know, very traditional to aesthetics. Like, what were the things that you were just not blindsided by, but you were like, huh, why do you guys do it that way? Or why do we do it this way for 15 years? This is a way better version of it here. Like, what are the things that are most compelling or stood out to you most in that transition?
Oh gosh, Tiffany, you're really setting me up here. God, I can go. So look, you know, I believe, first of all, hang on, I'm all crooked here. So first of all, if you know how they say, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. I say, if it ain't broke, break it and make it better. And I think that's really important. I think that I used to have a little bit of a hangup. I did some injecting. My wonderful, amazing PA, Jade, and my friend Richard, the plastic surgeon, said, if you just put your stuff on social, there's this thing called social media, they said, if you just put your results on it, you'll actually get busy. Because I was only there one day a week, and you could have gotten an appointment the next minute with me. And I just put stuff on social, and gradually it became so overwhelming, I left urology. But I will tell you that I used to have a hangup about not being a derm or a plastic surgeon, and all respect to them, but the initials after your name, and that's why I love the PAs, the NPs, it doesn't matter what your initials are, it matters who you are, what your passion is, what you want to do with your life, and how much you want to serve others. That's what's important. So I see this industry, I think, through very different eyes. I don't do my filler by syringe. That model to me is crazy. no one in my life, in my 20 years of doing surgery, no one came to me and said, Dr. Green, I want you to do my surgery. How much is it per stitch? It was ridiculous. I went into the operating room and I did not stop operating until I was happy that I had done my best work. And I'm not saying this is the right way to do it. It is the best way that works for me, because within a few percentage, I can tell how much filler I need to do an area. I don't have to, you know, and then I can use whatever I want and I work till I'm satisfied. Is it the most lucrative way to do it? Probably not, but that's not why I'm here. It's not what we're here to, we're here to serve. So there's a lot of things in the industry I think are a little crazy, Tiffany. So you ask away and I'll tell you.
Well, my example is always about, like, I always use a Stryker knee implant as my example. I've never heard a surgeon go into the operating room and the patient say, I prefer the Stryker knee implant, not the Jones knee implant. So if you can't give me the Stryker one, I'm not, cancel the surgery right now. But we think that patients believe that about filler and toxin. Like, do you think they're going to walk out because you don't have Botox today and you only have Dysport? Hell no. It's the same idea, the same fundamental thing. You're solving the same problem. If you're a great injector, it doesn't matter what you put in your hand, you'll figure it out. But we have this like phenomenon here, this hang up that they get to dictate what knee implant goes in during surgery. No, I just want to walk again. I don't care how you get there. I just want to walk again. I just want to look young again, right? It's the same idea, but we have become, and God love manufacturers, because I do. I mean, our conference, to your point, they sponsor so much of it. They're a huge part of it and we love them dearly. But they have created this environment where you have to choose a side, like a mean girl side. Like, I'm a juvenile girl. I'm a wrestling girl. At the end of the day, they all have a different purpose and they paint a different picture for very small, tiny reasons, viscosity, Jeep, whatever the reasons are. It's all very, it's minutia if you want to think of it that way. But we are just, it's emblazoned in our brain here that the brand does all the magic. So I would love to hear your thoughts on that, about our brand obsession in aesthetics.
Sure. Let me back up. I'm going to get to that. But, you know, in this industry, patients, it's really important, obviously, to listen to patients and understand where they're coming from, their desires. But it is not the right model for someone to come in and tell you what they want or what to do. Again, people come in and they say, I want my nasolabial folds done, or I want my tear troughs. People didn't come into me and tell me what surgery they wanted. They came in with what problem. And then we talked about the different surgical options, the pros and cons, what works well in my hands. So it really is something that we owe it to our patients to give them our best, which I think means a full face assessment, because these, you know, the good Lord, she did not make the tear trough in isolation. She made it as part of the mid face. It all blends together. So that's what I believe. As far as the branding goes, yes, there are many, many good products out there. They have different ways they behave. It's incumbent upon us to understand what works well in our hands, because the way someone injects something has to do with it. So don't get married to one branding. And the companies I most respect, Tiffany, are the ones who come in and talk about how to help us and what's great about that. It's fine if they talk about what's great about their product, but anyone that talks about the other products is less desirable in my mind, because let's talk about the good. Let's talk about helping our patients. Let's not worry about all the other stuff. So yep, we can do really good work with all, and I'm so thrilled. We have so many good things out there. Love it.
Oh yeah. Imagine 2015 having all this. Like, when I was at Galderma, I think I launched 7 products. Before I came, they had launched like 2 in the last, 7 years. It was like just this barrage of new things. And I think, to your point about learning and training and growing, my opinion, and this is probably unpopular, is that the industry is moving faster than we can train people to be good. We are launching products at such a high rate. Look at Threads. It's blown up in the past few years. We're not all trained on Threads yet. We can't get trained yet by good trainers. We have all these different rheological properties now, all these fillers. We're launching new toxins left and right. We have new laser devices. There is so much coming at an injector who, if they are new, to sort through all that is, first of all, impossible. But second of all, they're pushed into using things for various reasons without being comfortable yet in doing it. So we were just talking about before you guys came on that, people who look weird, a few injectors doing some bad work. I think it's going to become, unfortunately, more prevalent as we keep outpacing our ability to train injectors. So I don't know, when you're out seeing things at trainings, what your thoughts are on that, but I think we are moving a little too fast for the training to catch up.
Yeah. I guess my take on that is I love that we're advancing. I love that we're moving fast in terms of what can we create that gives our patients a better outcome, a safer outcome, a better experience. So there's no problem with that. In matter of fact, I'd love to see the industry do more evidence-based research. And there are some really good people out there pushing for that. I would love to do more of that. It is the push that we're seeing that you're referring to is sometimes by driving the marketplace and the demand and creating claims that are maybe overblown. And also the regulations of what we require before someone can do a new technique. And, you know, that we just have to have better oversight of ourselves, or someone is going to have oversight of us, you know, and that's just a reality. It's coming. So we have to get together about that.
Yeah, we need to have a unified, you know, I don't want to say a board, but or even a certification, but some standard of care to say, where are you in this continuum of learning and what should you be allowed to do at this point? Because, I mean, you guys as surgeons, you have a scope of practice, right? You don't walk in one day with a scalpel and just start cutting. You have to obviously fellowships and trainings, and you do cases under the purview of someone else and you learn. And we have none of that here because there is no governing body, which I think is very scary. But I think to your point, if we don't self-regulate, then someone will regulate us. And I think that day is not too far away. In some states, it's already happening, as you know. But you obviously employ, you know, PAs, NPs. How does that whole process work? Are they, you know, are they like a little, I know that Jade's like a little celebrity within your practice. I mean, she's a celebrity anyway on Instagram, doing social media, to your point. But what is it like from that perspective to see it through their eyes, not being physicians, right? Because it's different if you're not a physician in this industry. We've made that abundantly clear. If you're not core, not a physician, then God bless your soul here. But seeing that through their eyes, like how does that work for you and kind of learning with them, along with them, and how the industry is changing?
Yeah. So we have a really rigorous training program. I have two master estheticians and I have a laser, and they can't touch that until they've done months and months with me directing them, supervising. I have a practice manager as an esthetician. So we're very, very rigorous about what we do internally. Jade's phenomenal. I can't say enough about her. She came to me incredibly skilled, but Jade never stops training. She is passionate about learning, which is great. We have someone, I've just been blessed, Tiffany, because we have someone who has been with me longer than anyone in the practice. She's a master esthetician, was our master esthetician for years, went to nursing school, has come back, and literally Jade and I have hand trained her. And we would, I mean, yeah, could we have had her do basic filler early on? We wouldn't let her touch filler, nor did she want to, for months and months. She did Botox for months, because that is the rigor that we demand. And I don't necessarily see that right now, where people do some filler in a weekend course and start doing filler. It's worrisome to me. It's very worrisome.
Well, thinking about that part, because I feel like you, again, in your ninja injector land, you're also like the ninja trainer getting trained all the time. But let's talk about the business side of it, because I think, you know, skill set, unfortunately here, unlike, I think traditional medicine is different, where if you're an amazing surgeon, they will find you and you'll stay booked, right? Because it's an in-demand thing because you're an amazing surgeon. It's not a common skill set. But I think if you're an amazing injector, you better be damn good at business too, because this industry will eat you alive. It's too competitive. So thinking through like your philosophy on, you know, I love that you said, I don't do Botox, don't do fillers, I do confidence. Like that mindset, what is your go-to-market as a practice? Like how do you market yourself? How do you get patients to buy into that concept? What does that look like in the day-to-day?
Sure. That's a great question. First of all, I do keep my thinking cap on. I'm always learning from people every day, everywhere I go. There's like this woman who was like from Mississippi State, and then she worked for Dillard's of all places. I just got some great inspiration from her that I took back and it added to my practice. I don't remember her name. What was that?
God bless me.
Oh, yeah. I think that was Tiffany. Yeah. So Tiffany shared some great tips from Dillard's, and you know, what does Dillard's department store have to do with the med spa in Richmond, Virginia? Everything. Just ask Tiffany. Tiffany, share with us. I mean, the stuff you have such a wealth of knowledge. I love it.
Well, I will tell the black dress story because I think it is important.
Tell it. I love it. Tell it.
So I worked at Dillard's, and half my staff did as well. But you know, we talk about the black dress phenomenon, where if a person walks out of the dressing room in a black dress, and the associate says, oh my gosh, that looks incredible on you, you have to buy it. And then someone else walks up and says, oh, that is to die for. And someone else, oh, that's divine on you. I wonder if they have that my size. Where'd you find that dress? That person is going home with that dress, without a doubt, and probably the earrings, the, you know, the high heels, the handbag, because she's been told and validated multiple times that that choice is the right choice for her, and you couldn't talk her out of it. It's the idea that in a practice, the front desk, the injector, the girl at the checkout, once they've already bought it and they've already been injected, reaffirming again, like, oh, you made a great choice to get the lips today. You look incredible. They go home feeling like I've been validated. I made the right choice. This is a successful trip for me. And thank you to my injector for carrying me across the bridge of my decision to the other side to say, huh, we did it together. And the black dress, it's everywhere in your life. Think about when you go buy a car, same thing. The black dress phenomenon is real, I promise you.
Yeah, no, I love that. And Tiffany, that spoke to me and I appreciate learning from you so much. And here's the thing about that. Dillard's makes good stuff. And the key thing about that is that person did look good in that black dress because that's a quality black dress. This falls apart. This becomes hypocritical, self-serving, and leads you straight below, you know, downward if she didn't look good, but she did. And so that's the thing, is you have to have a product, you have to have the quality you believe in. I know this is a little, again, this is maybe it goes against the grain, but not only do I believe that we should not, at Revie, we do not compete on price, but we also don't compete on quality. And you might say, well, you have jade there, why would you not compete on quality? It's not that I don't believe we are really high quality, because we are, but there's no light at the end of that tunnel. Some days someone may be better than us and then we'll be better than them. But when you compete on quality and price, that's manipulation, not manipulation in a negative sense. It's just changing behavior. We compete on what we believe. We believe in treating in our mission to help others, and we believe in creating a world where everyone's confident. And everything we do, every action we take, everything we hold up to that light, is this going to help people be more confident? And so the little black dress, the black dress, is those people know that that woman, by being validated, is not only going to get a dress, but she's getting confidence. She feels better, and she's going to go home and treat her husband better, and he's going to treat his associate better, and we are making the whole universe better in a karma kind of way. And so that's what it's about. It's not about, you know, people say, how did you make this huge switch? I'm doing the same thing I did for 20 years. I was a urologic surgeon and I fixed incontinence. You take a woman who can't jump with her kids or run or do anything, and she pees on herself, and you get her to stop peeing, and she loves you and she has confidence. I'm doing the same thing I did. It's just higher north in the body. It's no different. I'm telling you. So I don't know where we got off on that. Sorry, but what was the question?
Well, you know, I want to make a comment on that, because I think you bring up such a valuable concept that I have been saying this for years. People don't listen to me when I say it, but people will take a less good result for a better experience. You can be the most, I mean, we talk about bedside manner all the time, right? Especially if you have an asshole surgeon who's an amazing surgeon. You're like, oh, I don't care. I want to feel better. You know, to your point about, you know, urology, those kinds of concerns. But aesthetics, we have a luxury of choosing. And people will settle for a less amazing result because they love where they go. It makes them feel good. They feel like they belong to something. It's like I get my lashes done and I go to Amazing Lash. They're not the best by any means, but they're open all the time. They know my name. I can get in at a minute's notice, to your point about, you know, the phone calls. And so I get a less good result because the convenience and the atmosphere is good for my lifestyle. I think it's no different here. And we obsess over being the best quality injector. But to your point, according to whom? Is it according to me as a patient? Is it according to you? Is it technical skill? Is it someone at a training saying I'm great? Like, according to whom? There is no right and wrong there. It's whatever the patient perceives to be what they believe is quality. That's kind of our North Star. It's not about if you're technically proficient enough to be the best or not the best. I just think there is a part there that is very psychological that we sometimes skip over because we're so obsessed with being technically amazing and all the technical training that we forget the patient's still a person in the chair, a real human who has feelings. We have to impress them too. You're not just impressing our other injector friends on Instagram. You know, it's, we kind of forget about that, I think, but I'll get off my soapbox now. Sorry.
Yeah.
I'm riding my soapbox today.
Yeah. So I think, did you ask about how we grew or why we grew or anything like that?
And like how you go to market, like how does this show up in your day to day with patients? Like what's your marketing messaging, if you want to say that word, to your patients?
Sure. Yeah. So that's a great question, because we have been very fortunate to grow and really expand and be very, very busy. And I think it has to do with we every day go out and we rejoice in helping others, and we share that, and it doesn't end at our door. We just got done doing a big giant end of summer party. We put on the party, we have our vendors donate products, we do a raffle, and 100% of everything we raise goes to an organization in the community. We just did it for Planned Parenthood. We had a great outshow of support. We had vendors come and say, I want to be part of it. I'm going to donate my services. A tattoo artist donated, and he just gave, Tiffany, not only did our vendors come and give us stuff and people, the people we hired to work the bar gave us their tips to donate. And now I took my whole team to visit the SB Family Shelter. It's one of the only shelters in Richmond that'll take homeless people with kids. And we visited there, and now we're doing a holiday fundraiser for them. So this, and I know you asked me about marketing, and here I am talking about that, but that is our marketing, because we want people who believe what we believe, and we want people who are gonna be with us. And that has followed. So do I do Facebook ads? No, right now we don't. Do we do Google AdWords? No, we don't. We do what we do. We put it out there, and we love it. You know, that's our marketing. So that's what we do.
It's affinity marketing, right? It's that corporate social responsibility. It's the idea that, you're putting, I do believe in karma. You mentioned karma a little bit before, but I believe you're putting good things out in the universe. But I think patients see that. I'm sure, Richmond's not a huge town. I've been there. It's, by the way, I love Richmond. It's a great place to be. But I'm sure that they see that, and they feel like you're investing in their community. I think we lose that with all these like big chains and things. Like you live there, you work there, you spend your money there. Like you're building your own community, and there's something to be said for that as a patient saying, "Where do I choose to spend my money? People who spend it with me, right in my own backyard." I think I don't know. I think that's a great, brilliant strategy, personally.
The other thing we do to tell you is that again, new to this game. And when we started shifting, I said, boy, I don't know anything. What social media? So I went for more training, and I went to something called Social Media Marketing World, which is held every year in San Diego. A guy named Michael Stelzner. I want to shout out to them, because we've been a couple of times. We're going again this year. And it's a really good conference, because it's not for the aesthetics industry. It's for marketers and business owners. So you get a really good mix. And I love big takeaway messages. And the first year I went, I came back from my team and I said, I got a big presentation for you to make about what I learned at Social Media Marketing World. I said, you ready for it? Just push the damn button. And what that meant for me was, we have to be authentic. And I think that's another reason we have grown so much. My team knows, if you're going to work here, I'm going to be videoing crazy stuff. And the background might be messy. I'm not going to try to fix out the background. This is real. This is who we are. This is what we do. We have fun. And what you want someone to walk into your place and say, God, I feel like I already know you guys. That to me is success, because we want you to know us. And God, this is your face. You're trusting us with your face. I mean, come on. We want people who know who we are. And that bit of our marketing has been tremendous, I think, because it's really fun. I love to have fun. I'm too old to go to work and not have fun. I mean, and if you're in this industry and you're not having fun, there's something wrong with you. I mean, this is the most happy place to be in the world.
And no one here is sick, right? This is not sick medicine. This is like all, fun medicine. If you want, it's still medicine. Don't anyone come for me. I said it's still medicine, but it is a much more fun, exciting field than, traditional things. Like you were there, you know what that feels like. It's just different. But I think your authenticity, I think you're a passionate person from the minute you meet you. You can feel the passion that you have for what you do. I'm sure that very much shines through. But I'm just curious of how you ended up with the ninja injector. You're like you're the friendliest person I've ever met in my whole life. I'm like, where did you get a ninja from that? So give us the high level of how that name came about.
Very simple. If you scroll to the bottom of my Instagram, you'll see at Dr. Lonnie Green. That's who I was. And COVID happened, right? So we had to wear masks. I had an otoplasty. I had my ears tacked back years ago, and the mask was pulling on my ears. It was really killing me. So I got a black surgeon's cap, but I also sweat a lot, and it was too heavy. So I did what I do all the time. I go on Amazon, right? And the closest I could find was this do-rag. And so I got this. And so, you know, during COVID, it was, you know, the ninja. I had the black thing and I had this. And one of my patients said, "Wow, you look like a ninja injector." And she brought in a t-shirt that she had made that said ninja injector. And I was like, that's it, you know, because, you know, look, social media is about capturing attention. And I know you may find this hard to believe, but I'm not a beautiful woman. And so I got to have a shtick, you know, and it was fun. And you know, I got like a ninja duck. One of my patients made me this little ninja thing out of her kids' toys. So it's fun. You know, I love it. So that's my story and I'm sticking to it. I'm the ninja injector. And oh, one last thing. I recommend if any of you are going to get an Instagram name and you're not sure what to do, I highly, highly recommend picking one that already has an emoji. Because I can always end everything I do with the ninja emoji. It's like ready made for me. I love it.
I do too. And I also pick one that doesn't have a brand name in it. We just had a person on. We were filming some earlier things. They had to take the Botox out of their name. And, you know, Julie had to go through it with Juvederm Julie. And it's like, pick a name that you can have forever. And I think the idea you can brand it, like to your point about having little ninja things everywhere, is so fun. Mine's my name, yeah. Which is so boring. I wish I had a fun one. I'm going to have to get a fun one. But, you know, it's so funny, though, when you mention that, because at the conference, I know everyone by their Instagram handle. I don't know their real names. Like, I know their Instagram names. Like, I call Erica Bunny all the time because that's her Instagram handle. Like, I know your name is not Bunny, but for me, it is. But it's so funny that we walk up and say, "Oh, hey, Ninja Injector." Like, we wouldn't even say your name. But yeah, it's social media has become such a connector. And I think we talk about it a lot on this show about just the downside of it and how much it causes stress and harm to patients, to injectors. It adds a layer of complexity. But it's also how we connect with the world. I think of all the things we know now and how we can learn and grow through Instagram that we could have never done 10 years ago. Like, it's opened up. I know what you're doing all the time. Like, I know that you're in trainings. I see that you're in LA. I knew you did the ultrasound class. I saw that on Instagram. Like, I keep up with you. It's like the greatest way to keep with all your friends. You know, I don't know. I think it's a great thing, but brand it to your point. Brand it. Make it cool.
It is a blessing. I don't even think twice. I used to think twice about saying it, but I say, "Oh yeah, I talked to her and she's my friend and this and that." And I've never met these people in my life, you know, but, and then you meet them at a conference and it's like, "Oh my God, it's so good to finally meet you. But we've been talking." It's, I love it. I can see why the word social is in social media. Sure. It has its dark side, but I this community, again, it's in its infancy. I loved surgery. I loved what I did. I had a great run. I didn't leave it because I didn't love it. I didn't love the regulations and insurance stuff because I was spending 40% of my time at the computer. Now I'm with my patients all day long, face to face. I love it. But anyway, the social part of things is, and this community in particular, the injectors community, is so positive and warm. I feel like I've just landed in a dream. I love it. And the people, I love the people. And I'm so grateful to be here. I'm grateful to just have a little role in there and contribute what I can try to contribute.
Well, I think the perspective is different for you because you come from somewhere else. People who have been doing this and only this for so long, they're very jaded, as we know, because they've been through a lot of the crap that comes with it. But you're seeing it as someone coming from a whole different environment saying, "Gosh, look how refreshing this is," because we are all in each other's business all day long. It is such a small world. I come from optometry before this. And in optometry, no one knows anybody. No one cares. Like, you do your own eye prep. You know, it's not the same. We're here. It's like everyone wants to be in everyone's business for better or for worse. But I feel like we are so tight knit that everywhere you go, you have a friend. Like, you never walk into a party alone in aesthetics. You'll know 15 people there for sure the minute you walk in the front door, which I think is a wonderful thing. I actually appreciate it and value it tremendously, but some folks don't love it so much. But your experience, you love it, right? You're an industry guy.
I cannot believe I get paid to do this. Like, I can't believe people pay me. I would do this for free. It is so much fun. I love it. I can't believe I get paid to do it. I feel very fortunate about that. And the people I'm surrounded by are just amazing.
Well, you tossed your hat in the ring at Aesthetic Next, and you spoke in the business section, which this year was phenomenal. It'll be even bigger next year. Where do you go from here with that kind of setup? Are you going to start doing trainings? Like, what is your decision there to say, now that I've kind of gotten my footing here, I have a really successful practice, I've learned a lot. When do you start giving back, and what does that look like, you know, at that decision point, like on a national scale?
Oh, that is a great question, because I do love the patient care, direct patient care, but I do feel obligated because I used to have residents with me and I loved giving back. So I've been chosen to be a trainer for a national company. So I will go to that train the trainer kind of thing and do some trainings for them. We are going to become a training center here. I've already talked to Jade about that, and that's in the plans, because I think it's really important to stress my way is not the right way, but one needs to go to different people and take the best and then make it your own. So we want to give back that way. I have a lot of things planned in that regard. I loved meeting Leonie this weekend. She blew my mind with vascular occlusions. She's the world, one of the world experts. You're not targeting the bolus of filler in the vessel. That's not what she does. You're targeting the general area, which means her presupposition is that the hyaluronidase is actually vasodilating rather than going into one specific artery. Well, that blew my mind, and because that means we have an opportunity, and I wish I had the million years to do this, but that means there's other things we can do to cause vasodilation. And maybe there's ways we can even preemptively do this at the first sign of blanching other than just hyaluronidase. So it opens up a whole new avenue of ways thinking about keeping our patients safe. So I want to get some ideas about that to the right people who can look into that. I also, Tiffany, I haven't announced this yet, but I'll talk to you more about this, but I want a way to, for our industry to combat, not just passively, but to actively combat the small percentage of people who are making people look weird, because it breaks my heart. People are vulnerable. People have not as much confidence as they should have, because nobody needs Botox and nobody needs filler. Okay. We need food, water. It's a want, it's a desire. And I get it. And it's nice because it gives us confidence. But with that comes great responsibility. And so we have to actively not only speak out, but we have to actively give back to the community in a meaningful way, especially to the vulnerable people, the younger people who may not understand this. So I'm going to be organizing something along those lines. Stay tuned, but I will greatly need help of people like you who are amazing at what they do and can really make things happen.
Oh, thank you for saying that. That's amazing. I never get tired of hearing that. No, I'm kidding. But I think you bring up, you know, the idea of us coming together to support that. Because here's my question for you, Dr. Green. This is what I can't ever understand. I get an Instagram all the time, right? It's a job hazard for me. I have to do our Instagram here in Aesthetic Record. And I see injectors who post before and afters that are tragic. I mean, and I mean that not in a funny way. Like, they're actually tragic. And the patient walks out far less good, far less attractive and confident, I'm sure, when they went in. And the injectors are proud of that result. They're putting on Instagram, like, look at my amazing result. And I wonder to myself, in your community, how come no one is reaching out to you saying, you know, listen, sweet girl, I get that you think you did a great job, but let's walk through what you've, you know, facial anatomy, vectors, ratios, you know, go to an Allergan training with me, go to a Galderma training, something to get them out of that, to say, this is not what we should be doing here. We're not perpetuating the right look, because the whole community suffers, is my point in saying that, is that whole community now has a black eye on it, because everyone in that community thinks that that's what aesthetics is going to do to a person, that result. And then they all start saying, I don't want to get Botox. I don't want to get filler. Oh my gosh, no way. I don't want to look like that. But she's not representative of our entire industry. She's one injector doing one bad thing, and we all suffer from it. It's like the whole drop brow phenomenon, right? If one drop brow is 100 drop brows in a practice, it ruins the practice. How do we get past it? How do we have people who can stand up and say, let me help you, let me tell you there's a better way, so you don't wreck it for you and your patients, number one, but also for all the rest of us?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think my approach wouldn't be confrontational with the injectors themselves, because I think there's probably no light at the end of that tunnel. If it's in a confrontational way, it's really hard to change someone's mindset. other than leading by example, engaging meaningful conversation, but not on social, because I think it, when there's not a human interaction, it, electronically is very difficult. So I worry about that kind of engagement. But leading by example, and then also leading by, in a way, talking about these results that we see in our celebrities and other people who are overdone, but not talking in a negative way. It's important to stay positive. So we can say that someone's cheeks are overdone, but we can say it in a way that, look, here's the story, in a more clinical way, and then our opinion without shaming anyone. And I think that will go a much longer way than negativity and the harshness. Sometimes I see harshness directed, and it makes me sad, because I have empathy for people who don't know maybe the right way. I feel sorry for them, and I want to help them. So that's a long answer. I don't think there's an easy fix, but if we lead by example and we talk about things that are we don't like in a way that's more clinical than shaming, I think that will go the longest way.
I think you said the right word. I mean, they're ignorant to it, right? They just don't know better yet. People think of ignorance as a bad thing. Ignorance is just, I don't know yet. I'm sure the answer is there. I just don't personally know it yet. And I think part of it is recognizing that. We had a person on who said, you know, it took me a long time to get good. It took me years to get good. I was not good for a long time. I did horrible work in the beginning. And I recognize that now. But at the time, I just didn't know how to get better yet. But I knew I had to get better. I just wasn't sure what, you know, what was the avenue for that. I think that's the case in many, and for many people, is that they know they're not the best, but they don't have access to training. They're not sure where to go get training. They're not sure who to reach out to, who's a good mentor. They've been told that the industry is scary. People are going to come for you, and they're going to take your patients. And, you know, we do all these things in the beginning that I think make people a little bit rattled. But I think to your point, we've got to recognize that ignorance is a real thing. Let's put our hand down, you know, and pull them back up and help them succeed.
And you know what else, Tiffany? It's the mindset and the attitude, because I can tell you now, after having experienced the unbelievable show that you put on and working with you closely, especially this past year, that people talk about talent. Are you a talented injection? This and that. But I look at someone like you, and you're brilliant, you're talented, but my message is, yeah, there's different levels of talent we're born with, but nobody should be able to outwork you. And I saw how hard you worked, and how every time I texted you, boom, the easel came up. Like, you were just on it with hard work. So I know you're talented, but I know that beyond the talent was the hard work. So anyone who's willing to put the work in can do amazing things, as was the show, because again, it was a good show, but you texted you, I got there was no room for me, boom, Tiffany's on it. I got there, the easel wasn't set up, boom, Tiffany's on it. She's like, meanwhile, she's doing a million other things. So that's the hard work ethic, and that you can't teach.
Well, you're not wrong. And I think that the point of that, though, is, Lonnie, I don't get to enjoy it. Like, you guys get to enjoy it. We never get to enjoy any of it. I hear that.
It's not about you.
I know. I hear it. I said, it's just like getting married. I hear that the wedding was fabulous. Who knows? I hear the conference is great. I've never gotten to experience it, but I hear it's a great place and fun time. But we never get to do it. This year was better than last year. But there is a part of it where, even in a business, when you're a business owner, it's a lot of days it's work and it's not fun. But you're creating things that people love and that people find, you know, solace in. If they're not confident, they find who they are again. At the conference, they find their pod, their people. They find new injection technique. Whatever it is, you have to rest assured of knowing that you're giving back so much more than the pain you feel in the moment of how much it sucks or how tired you are. The fact that, you know, you got to know what your my passion. I know that you're a guy that's big about your why and your passion. My passion is to improve someone else's life in any facet. I don't care what it is, in any way. And I will go to the grave, die trying to do it, to my own, you know, my own discomfort and discredit and maybe destruction some days. But that's what drives me. Like, that's the fire in my belly, is about making other people's lives better, richer, more, you know, more full. And that's what I love. But I think if you're a person who doesn't feel that way, the work probably feels overwhelming and stifling of your creativity and your creative artist mind to be an injector and be free and live a life untethered. That's just not reality. To have a big impact, you got to do a big amount of work. And it's just the way the cookie crumbles. But your guy is not scared of hard work. I know that for sure.
Well, listen, I got to say something. First of all, and talk about hard work, I mean, I want to shout out Gretchen is the one who introduced us. And we tried, but I didn't even get to see her because she was working so hard at that conference. So thank you, Gretchen. And I got to her because Rachel Rubin was on a show, and the world works that way. So I want to shout out to those people. I will tell you, Tiffany, haven't known you that long, but I know you're familiar with Simon Sinek, and he's been a big influence on me. And clinically, I just want to shout out to Dr. Arthur Swift, who's really changed my whole life about injecting, and Sebastian Cotopanna. So I don't know if you're familiar with a mission versus your just cause. Do you know that sort of concept of that?
I do, but not in the way that you're going to explain it. So give it to me.
Yeah. So my mission is to help. My why is to help others. I just have always been drawn to that. And I think your mission and your why is the same. But I believe, knowing what I know about you and knowing your background, I think I would say that a just cause is something that you believe in so strongly that no matter what, this is what you do. You would do this because this is what you believe in doing. And I believe that your mission is to help others, but your just cause is to advance industries. Because I've seen your resume, and you go into an industry, and that's what you do. You advance the industry. So I'm so thrilled you're in this industry, because you did it in the various industries through which you've come up. This is what you do, and you do it very well. And so I don't know if you, here I am, why should I be telling you your just cause? But I can't help it when I meet people. I think that's your just cause.
I like that. I mean, to be thought of that way, by the way, first of all, is a huge compliment. People say these things to me, Dr. Green, and I'm like, I wonder why they think that. I just show up and go to work. You know, isn't it funny when you're the person who's doing it? And I'm sure people think about your skill set and your amazing career, and you're like, I just got out of bed in the morning and did what I like to do. You know, I think we don't see it in the same way, because I'm like, well, I just hope that you had a good time. Like, did you have a good time? Then great. It was all worth it. But this idea of a mission and a just cause, I like that, because there are things that people will go to the end of the earth for. And it's not their mission, but it's what drives them. It's like the thing in their brain that they can't shut off. And you're right. I like to move fast and break shit. That's what we say around here. And to your point, if it's not broke, you know, break it and refix it. That's me in a nutshell. I like to tinker here and there. But, you know, I think this industry finds people like us. It's a magnet for people who want to change something. Healthcare is so broken in this country that we're all tired of it being broken. And then we're like, we can make a difference here. We can rebuild it from scratch as a baby industry. We can start over and right the wrongs of those who came before us here. And I think that's what keeps us all, like, we're all prisoners. We're golden handcuffs. But because it's what drives us is to make something different and new and better. And we all just kind of found each other. So I think Gretchen's the same way. She's exactly the same way we are. She's wanting to change the world all the time. And Amy Birkenstein, Brittany Crozier, the whole group is like, let's just change everything. So we sit around at night and drink wine and talk about changing the world, you know. But that's what drives us. So I like that, a just cause. I'm going to do some more research on that.
Yeah, no, if we pick up Tiffany Hall and put her in a different industry, I guarantee you in 3 years she'll be running a show and leading advances in a totally different industry. It'll take her 3 years, maybe.
I'll be old, then I'll have more gray hair. Well, I think that let's not discount you here, buddy. How long have you actually been in aesthetics full-time? Like, left surgery, how long have you been only doing this?
If I tell you, people might not, they may stop coming to me. I've been a full-time injector a little over 2 years. And again, I love the fact that the quote is, I can see so far because I stand on the shoulders of giants. And truly, people like Dr. Swift and, you know, I've learned from everyone. But, you know, it is coming from this, you know, and Gretchen and I have talked about this because she also has a very different background. But entering this field with 20 years of surgery in my hands, it was a little different, and how I looked at anatomy and how I understood, and, you know, Tiffany, I went home and studied on the weekends. I mean, you got to put in the time, but I feel very fortunate to have been able to have wonderful mentors and teachers. I've learned so much from them and continue to learn.
Well, I think you've done a lot in 2 years. Holy cow. people are listening to this right now saying, holy crap, I'm way behind schedule. I'm 10 years in and I'm not there yet. But you're in the right rooms. I mean, you speak a lot to me of a person who understands, first of all, your worth and your value. You're charging for it appropriately, you know, based on full face correction and things, but also aligning yourself with the right people. I try to explain to folks all the time that going to a training is equal parts getting trained, but also finding your tribe and finding people who will speak for you and about you in a room when you're not there, and who will be your advocate. And because Gretchen called me and said immediately, you got to have this guy at your show. Like, she went to bat for you and just said, you got to have him. Come into my Instagram Live, watch us. And if you like him, he has my vote. Like, get him to your show. She stood up for you, aside on, you know, without any reservation. So I think part of being in a training is you find people who are like you, you network, you connect, you find your, you know, your village or your pod, and then you start to connect the dots. To your point, these doors that start to open, and people are, I know her and she knows him, and you know, it's like Kevin Bacon around here, 6 degrees of separation. And that's how you move yourself forward in an industry that's small and close, you know, and close knit, where everyone thinks everyone else is out to get them. You have to find the right people, and then they'll go to bat for you. And then all of a sudden, 2 years later, you're like, you know, giant Instagram, having fun and great practice, making lots of money, doing what you love. And, you know, here you are.
Well, I can tell you, if you go into a room and you're not the most talented person in the room, go stand next to the person who's most talented. Go stand next to them, help them, and learn. If you're in a room and you are the most talented person in the room, get out of that room and go find a room where you're not the most talented.
Couldn't agree more. And if you're an injector trainer and a newbie, a new baby training, don't get frustrated. Think about all the fun things you're getting to relearn because you're having to teach them again and go back to basics. Like, I wonder how many injectors remembered something teaching a new baby injector of like, oh crap, I haven't done that in years. Like, I should be doing that more often. And relearning, the value of relearning something because you're teaching it. Like, that's why I love to teach, because you get to learn again. I think that we discredit even that part of like, even if you are the most talented, by going back to the basics, you've learned again all the places that you're vulnerable, that you forgot about, all your blind spots. Like, it's like getting to relearn something for the first time all over again through someone else's eyes, I think is also an amazing part of it. So anyway, my soapboxes today are piling up all the way.
Yeah. Listen, I did over 4,000 sling surgeries for incontinence. I learned something from every single one, and every single one, I was a little nervous, and every single one was that patient's time. So when I do cheeks or whatever I do here, it doesn't matter how many I've done. It is the moment I'm with that patient. This is their time, and this is my time to give them everything I can to the absolute best, and I'm excited for them. So it's every single one is brand new. Over 4,000 surgeries, I don't know how much filler, but every single one is new.
Well, for the record, I have loved having you on. It's been an hour. I think it's just crazy. Before we go, though, I want to hear, you know, what's next for you? What's the next training you're going to go to so we can all sign up and go and see you? Where are you going to be next?
Well, the next thing I'm doing is going to Las Vegas to a train the trainer. I have plans. I was supposed to be doing Raja Keela's masterclass. I was supposed to shadow him, but they say shading over there. I was supposed to shade him on Thursday, go to his masterclass Saturday, Sunday, and also spend a day in London with Iyad Harb on noses. Unfortunately, that training was exactly when this national train the trainer of training was. So I've been corresponding with Helen, who's Raj's person. And so sometime early 2023, I will be in London training, hopefully training with Raj and Dr. Iyad Harb as my very next training. And because the holidays are coming up. So that's my next thing. And but you never know, something might pop up before then.
Well, Raj is a great DJ and a lot of fun. So prepare yourself for that. If you go to shade with him, that's so funny that they say shade. If you go shade with him, get ready for some awesome music and some like lots of great food and lots of fun. He's a super fun guy. But I guess you can't tell us the company yet. Is the cat still in the bag of who you're going to train for?
Oh no. I'm training with Allergan. So yeah, I've been very honored to have been chosen as an Allergan trainer. I love advancing, having an opportunity to advance the industry in whatever small way I can give back. And I have never been asked before by any company, so I'll just put it out there. I'll train. I love advancing knowledge. I love getting knowledge. And so there's an opportunity to go to Las Vegas in early November. I'm really looking forward to meeting new people, connecting with old friends, getting new skills. And I'll do anything for this industry. I feel like I owe the aesthetics industry so much for giving me a chance to have this new life and be with patients face to face all the time. So, and please, if anyone wants to reach out, we were all new. I had an Instagram with no followers. And believe me, anyone who wants to reach out to me, I am more than happy. I love interacting. And so I just want to have a chance to help anyone I can in this industry be as fortunate as I've been fortunate.
And as we all know, it's at Ninja Injector for his Instagram. And for sure, go follow him. He has all kinds of fun Instagram. To your point, you just kind of hit the button and you go. I love your Instagram. It's very raw, very real. Mine's overly curated, so I never get anything done. What do they say? That done's better than good. I should heed that warning. But no, it's been great to have you on, and I look forward to seeing, like, in the next 2 years where you go, what you do, how much more you've, you know, developed and learned and touched lives and made a huge impact on your patients and on your fellow colleagues too. So kudos for what you're doing, and thank you for coming on For the Record and also for coming to Aesthetic Next.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for having me talk at Aesthetic Next. Thank you for having me tonight. And I look forward to seeing you again in the near future.
Yes, sir. Well, guys, we'll see you again next week for another episode of For the Record.
Thanks for listening to another episode of For the Record. This podcast is not intended to provide legal or medical advice. It's for entertainment, education, and information purposes only. For more information on this week's guest or to get started with Aesthetic Record, email us at info@aestheticrecord.com. Be sure to tune in next week for more fresh perspectives on disrupting the status quo and surviving in the aesthetics industry.